Welcome to the Colts Reunion Podcast, a conversation with former Colts players. A look back at their career, what they're up to now, and how the Colts played a positive role in their lives.
Welcome to a special edition. This is the Colts official podcast, but this is the alumni edition, where we bring you the greats from the past. My name is Jeffrey Gorman, and I sit across from one of the greats, a Ring of Honor member named Bill Brooks, who knows what it takes to be successful in the NFL and what it takes to have a great career. So we're going to be talking to the greats, and we start off with a bang, Bill Brooks. I am talking about a future Pro Football Hall of Fame member. I said it, seven-time Pro Bowler, AFC Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, the list goes on and on. Number 93, he's a fan favorite. Dwight Freeney, I am honored to call you the first guest here on the Colts official podcast, alumni edition.
What's going on, fellas? How are you?
Oh, doing great, doing great. Okay, the most important questions. I'm going to get deep here, Dwight Free. I'm going to get deep with you here, but I'm going to start off with off the field a little bit. Tell me about what your life has been as a new father.
Oh, you definitely are starting deep.
Yes, sir.
Let me tell you something. You know, it's funny. As you talk to people about kids, you don't really know until you get in it. And that's exactly what's happening with me right now. It's, let me tell you, like the feelings that you have when you see her. I don't care what happened that day. I don't care if I shot 100 on the golf course or got a speeding ticket on the way home. When you walk through the door and you see the look on your daughter's face, it all goes away. You know, and it's definitely a special feeling. Something that I never knew existed.
I'm going to stay deep because Bill Brooks is also a father. I'm not, but I do know this about it is to be a professional athlete, you have to have a certain degree of selfishness. You really do, because you have to be the best at what you do, which you did for year after year, best in the world, Dwight. That's a tough thing to come on because it's not a me thing anymore. It's a we thing.
Oh, it is absolutely, I mean, you hit it right on the head. It's not about you. Your schedule becomes non-existent. You don't have a schedule. It's your baby's schedule. And everything goes around the baby's schedule. And right now, you know, I'm realizing, you know, when people say, you know, get your sleep before you have that baby, right. I never knew what that meant. Get my sleep, sure, no problem. You know, I stay up sometimes late all the time. I'll be fine. Well, let me tell you something. When the baby sleeps, you better sleep. Because right now, she got me going through a hurricane. I'm waking up at like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out.
Changing diapers, right? Changing diapers?
Oh my God, I'm a pro. All pro baby diaper change.
Congrats, Dwight. That is so awesome. Baby Olivia, I hope you listen to this years down the road. Your dad is one of the great ones here in Indianapolis. And again, we're talking to Dwight Freeney. Okay, I'm staying deep with you. What did the game of professional football give you? And I don't want the monetary answer as far as making you a living and making you a rich man and everything. But what did pro football give you other than, you know, a livelihood that you made money with, Dwight?
You know what? I think it's tough. It's tough to play the game of football. And people don't understand. You know, you talk to people who don't really know it but don't know it. They just pretty much think you just show up on Sunday and play, right? It's that grind. Monday through Sunday, you know, it's an emotional grind. It's a physical grind. You know, it's a mental grind. It's everything. So by the end of that week, you're so exhausted because you put so much into it. You know, you only get better and better and better at everything else in your life because you've gone through, you know, so much turmoil or so much grind doing that. When you go to something else, you know you can get through it, you know, because you've been through it. You've been through those 2 days in camp or those grinders during the week where you just didn't want to stretch, you didn't want to lift, you didn't want to study, you didn't want to do this. Mm-hmm. And I think if you survive those types of things, you become better on the other side of it.
Yeah, you know, Dwight, you talk about surviving the grind there. What are some of the things you did to get through those periods, to survive the grind for day in and day out, if it's going through training camp, the two-a-days, if it's having an injury or just not having a good day in the practice field? What are the things that you did, if it's mentally, physically, to get through those times?
Well, I think, Billy, is the one thing is routine. And routine you know, I mean, I'm seeing it again with the baby, but routine is everything. Because if you get on your routine, you can always default right back to that. If you get off, if something happens, if you get injured, okay, you get back to your routine and trust that. So if on Mondays you do, you know, massages, and then Tuesdays you do stretch stuff, and Wednesdays you lift, you stay on to that routine, and it will bring you back home when things kind of get shaky and things don't go, you know, the right way. That's one. I think the second thing is having pretty much tunnel vision. You know, worry about the moment, all right? All right, I got to stretch. That's what I'm working about. Working on right now, that's the only thing I'm focusing on. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about what you got to do later until you get to later, you know? So if you sit there and think throughout your entire day, man, I got film study, damn, and then I got to stretch, dang, I got to go to the weight room, then I got to go to chiropractor, and then I got to go, it becomes overwhelming. So if you take things in the moment, stay focused in the moment, and stay with your routine, it'll get you through a lot of those moments that you get tough.
That's a great Dwight Freeney. And I want to talk about your career, because we know you and love you, and you signed a one-year or a one-day contract to retire as a Colt, but you did play for other teams. How tough was that for you? Because you're the new guy coming in, and you have your own routine that gets you ready to play on Sunday, and you're the new guy in the locker room. How difficult was that for you? Because everybody knew who you were once you went in that locker room, and now you got to fit in as well.
It was extremely tough. For me, because I was such a routine guy, you know, and you know, people know me to know, you know, I'm eating certain foods, I'm doing certain things just to prepare myself. And I've done that when I was with the Colts for
sure.
10 plus years. So it's kind of like you're trying to teach an old dog new tricks when you end up signing to San Diego, and all of a sudden, you know, things are just a little different.
Yeah, right.
You know, nah, Dwight, you don't have an hour to get ready for practice. You really even got 30 minutes.
Jeez.
30 minutes.
That doesn't work.
How does that work? You know, so there's a lot of things, and it's nothing that they did wrong. They have their own system. So you have to find ways when you do move organizations to kind of fit in where you get in. You know,
I didn't like you in Detroit, Dwight. I'm not going to lie. I didn't like you in that uniform. I mean, I love you, but I didn't like seeing you wear that Hawaiian blue and gray. I did not like it.
You know what? The thing is, if it wasn't for a man, Jim Caldwell,
yes, sir. That's right. And Jim Caldwell's a smart man to bring you in. We're talking to Dwight Freeney. I got to ask about when you go into the Hall of Fame, and yeah, I know you're rolling your eyes at me right now, but I'll say it again. When you go into the Hall of Fame, one of the videos they're going to show is your spin move, okay, which is indefensible. If you don't believe me, ask another Hall of Famer named Jonathan Ogden. So if you could bring me back going through the first years, coming out of Syracuse, undersized, Dwight Freeney, shouldn't be a first rounder. Bill Polian thought otherwise. When did that spin move, and how did that spin move become part of your repertoire that nobody could defend?
Well, it's funny. The spin move actually evolved over the time, but it started way back in high school. I was on the practice field, and I was at the time, I don't know, you might, you know, this is something from the past now.
Okay.
It was called And1 mixtapes. Do you remember those?
Sure I do. Heck yeah, And1 mixtapes. Go.
And1 mixtapes, you would turn it on and you'll see guys playing the game of basketball, doing all types of crazy crossover spins,
yep,
and all different types of moves just to get to the basket or to break down the guy who's trying to defend them. So I was huge into that. But I played basketball, but I was a football guy. This was football season, and it was in practice. And it was kind of like, how do I get to point B, starting from point A, and make it look as crazy or as unique as possible? And that's where, for me, that's where the spin move started, as me trying to make that guy who's blocking me completely miss and fall on his face.
You succeeded.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's where it started. It started from something that wasn't even football-related, okay? And that's why I tell a lot of parents who talk to me, you know, what about my kid? Should he just play football? I say, no. Play all the sports. You never know what you're going to get or skill you're going to get from something else.
Right, right. I got to ask about John Teerlink. God rest his soul, former Colts defensive line coach, a guy that and Billy Teerlink as well, his son, who I know you're tight with. Did you have to sell him on that? Because John Teerlink is old school. You know, you're gonna raw dog these guys, and you're gonna put your fist up in their chest and just get by them and get run through them. But you said no, I'm gonna dance like a ballerina here to get to the quarterback. How was that convincing John Teerlink as well as Tony Dungy, Jim Caldwell, etc.?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, my man JT, you know, rest his soul. He was a guy who was a revolutionary at the position of defensive end, defensive line, okay? He did not care.
Oh.
Yeah, he was an old-school guy. He played in the 70s, you know. He coached all the greats. But he did not care if you did a somersault,
sure,
backflip. You know, he didn't care. You know what? He said, as long as it works, Dwight, it works. You could be wrong. He said, you can be a wrong alignment, do the wrong thing, but all of a sudden you made the play. Guess what? You were right. And so that's his mentality. And I was blessed to come up under him
in
his tutelage, because all he did was nurture and keep on saying, Dwight, do whatever you want to do as long as you get there. You don't have those types of experience. And Billy will tell you, some of these coaches will put you in shackles and will say, yo, you have to do it this way.
Right.
No other way works. And I was just blessed to come up at the right time to be coached by a great like JT under Dungy, to be like, look, man, do what you got to do. Get there however you get there. Doesn't matter.
That's great. You know, JT had a big influence on you, and he also had a big influence on Robert Mathis. And that's what I want to talk about with you right now. You and Robert were one of the best defensive end duos in the National Football League. Could be the best defensive end duos in history of the National Football League. How special was it to have Robert on the other side of you when you two can wreak havoc on the quarterback and the offensive lines?
Yeah, man, it's kind of – it's one of those things you don't know what when it's not there anymore, then it's like, you know, you're sick to your stomach. And I remember when I left and I had to go to San Diego, you know, you kind of get used to just looking across and knowing he's always going to be there. And you go to other teams and, you know, nothing against those other guys, but there were no Robert. They were no Robert. Robert was a dog, you know, and he was a guy who, if I got doubled, okay, I know my man Robert got it. Don't worry about it. If he's doubled, Robert, I got you.
Right.
I got it. And it was one of those things where we just leaned on each other, you know, and, you know, we always say, you know, we're brothers from a different mother. That's how we always, you know, call each other. We was like, you know, he spins, I spin. He spins the other left, I spin right.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like he's on the left side, I'm on the right side. I like to lean left. So it's kind of like he's my twin in a sense in a lot of what we've done. And he's an all-time great and absolutely should be in the Hall of Fame.
You know, he's your road dog and everything, and you guys were teammates and you worked together to get better. But did you guys ever have any friendly competition out there to see, you know, who gets to the quarterback first and who's going to get the most sacks, who's going to get the most strips and things of that nature?
Well,
just have a little friendly competition between the two of you guys.
Well, I think because of the way that we were programmed, it was always that mentality, you know, Talladega Nights type of, if you ain't first, you're last, you know, mentality. You know, so that's how we went out and performed and played, you know. And I think by default, it became, you know, one of those competitive things. But we didn't have to say anything.
Right.
I'm going to try to beat you there anyway, Robert. And even if if you happen to get there before and I happen to be a half second left, I'm going to raise my hand like I got it. that's just how it goes. But that's the nature of a pass rusher, man. That's the nature of guys who grind and thrive off of getting to the quarterback. It's a race, man. It's
a
race to get there.
You know how we look at that era that you were part of and the great success and the great wins and the Super Bowl, you know, that group. And now we look at that group, you included, I throw Tarik in there. I throw Gary in there. But the greats, the ones that are a Hall of Fame guy. I mean, we already got two of them in or three of them in with Marvin, Poley, and Dungy. You got Edgerrin and Peyton going in. You and Robert are up next. Jeff Saturday's out there. Does it take, who did I miss?
Reggie.
Gosh, does it take years, 10 years after the fact, to sit back and go, my gosh, did we have talent? Or when you're running that, Dwight, and you're dominating on defense and the offense is doing what they are, you know, does it still hold the same weight to you today because you guys were in, again, just making jokes of other people offensively and defensively the way that you guys did that? Did you know at the time that that group is as special as it is right now?
I think you never know how special it is until you're gone. We knew it was special. Don't get me wrong. When we're in it, we see our results. We see what we've done. We see how many 10-win seasons,
right,
playoff, consecutive playoff. We know our body of work. But you don't really know. It's kind of like when you leave college and you just say, thank God I'm out of this place. Right. And then 10 years later, you're like, man, I miss college. That's how it was with us. It was kind of like, I go to other teams or, I'm retired now, and I just look back and I'm like, man, we were something special. And you miss it more and more the more you're away from it. And you realize how great you really, really were as a team the further you are away from it. And you see the other struggles of so many other teams.
Let's talk about 18 for a second, because we've had fun through the years. When I would be at your locker back in the day, after practice or whatever, we'd have media time. You'd always have fun, jousting with the quarterback, because you didn't like quarterbacks. You said that right out. I got a quarterback here. I don't even like him, but I know he's my teammate. So how is that relationship now with Peyton? Because I know you guys, when the ones were going against the ones, you were trying everything to get close to him. I know you couldn't hit him, but you wanted to. That's one guy you did, and you had a chance, obviously, later on in your career. But what was your relationship with Peyton being on the other side of the ball, knowing that, man, this guy's leading us through the tunnel, and we're riding this horse for what it is? How was your relationship personally with him?
Yeah, everything has been great, man. Peyton, you're seeing a little bit more of who we know Peyton as you see him in the media and how he likes to crack jokes. He's a real light guy.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know it, if you followed his career on the field, because he seems like Mr. Serious, mm-hmm. Just everything was so serious. But, he's a guy who really is a lighthearted man, and he loves it. He enjoys his life. He enjoys his family. He enjoys his golf, and he's a guy that, you consider fam, and that's kind of what it is. And for me, obviously being a teammate of him for so many years, I think it's a little bit different when you're a defensive guy and you're an offensive guy. And people who don't know this, it's kind of, yes, we're on the same team. But when we walk in that building, other than the team meeting, it's kind of like we go to our cave,
right,
we go to their cave.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying, too? It's kind of like that. They do their thing. We do our thing. It's our responsibility to be ready to play this game. It's their responsibility to be ready. And then we meet up at very small moments and times during the week. But it's really them and then us, and then we meet together. And so it's a little bit different than being an offensive guy,
sure,
being in the room with him every day. But, my relationship with him, off the field now, it's been great. He invited me to Augusta to play some golf. He's a member now. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it, so he owes me another visit.
I heard stroke for stroke what happened in Augusta. I know Clyde Christensen was down there with you, so I know that was a fun trip.
Oh, my goodness. It was great. But like I said, that's the type of guy that
Peyton
is, man. He's just a great guy. And he'll do anything for us, and I'll do anything for him.
Now you talked about that special relationship with Peyton, and I'm sure you have a special relationship with Edgerrin and back then and still today. Mm-hmm. Now, after you guys kind of went to different teams and everything separated a little bit, you guys played on different teams. You with San Diego and Arizona, and then Edge went to Seattle, and then Peyton went to Denver. When you had an opportunity to play against those guys, how special was that? Meaning, like, you had an opportunity to actually sack Peyton Manning. You didn't have to worry about hitting him and hurting him. Or you had an opportunity to tackle Edge when Edge was playing with Seattle. So talk about those times when you had opportunity to play against those guys.
Let me tell you something. We'll start off with Peyton. I was hurt that entire year. okay? Like something, I had a knee, hyperextended knee issue. And I wasn't supposed to play that game. But there was no way I was going to miss the opportunity to finally get all the frustrations of not being able to hit him in practice. Seeing my road dog, you know, Robert, shock him and hit him when he came to Indianapolis. I had to get this guy. I had to hit him. Unfortunately for me, I was so banged up. I played the game basically on one and a half leg. And just, I was just like crying tears. Please, God, give me one more step so I can hit him one time. So I could just talk trash or say something. And I just never could get there. I just was so hurt. So, you know, that's my story with Payton. And then, you know, Edgerrin, the thing is, when we saw Edgerrin, you know, Edgerrin's just a true professional, man. And he was actually one of my roommates, you know, when I was the young pup and he was the veteran. And, you know, playing against Edgerrin, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you don't want to hit him. He's like my brother. Like, I don't want to, like, if I hit him too hard, you know, I don't want, you know, something to happen to him. And then I'm going to feel a complete, you know, like, oh, man, that's my guy. You know, so it's a little bit different with Edge, you know, because I just dislike quarterbacks so much. It's just one of those things that's like, that's the guy I'm aiming for. He's in my target.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And let's talk about another one of your teammates. I want to talk about practice. Now, during practice, I know sometimes you went against Tariq Glenn, and Tariq Glenn is one of the best tackles in the National Football League, and you went against some of the best tackles in the National Football League. How was it going against Tariq Glenn every day in practice, knowing that he was as good as he was, and you had to try to get to the quarterback as the best you can, and you and him battling it during practice each day?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Tariq gets the credit he deserves.
Agreed.
Tariq was one of the best offensive tackles in the National Football League for a stretch of time, at least 4, 5, 6 years. I was blessed to go against that guy every day in practice. And if it wasn't for him, I don't think I would have became the player that I became. And it's one of those things where, you know, I'm a rookie. I get in there. And you see this big, I mean, you know, you see college offensive tackles. Oh, okay, he's a big guy or whatever. Listen, T-Bone, grown man. I mean, I'm talking tricep, bicep, looking like, you know, hamstring, quad. Like, he got four legs, you know, huge arms. And I'm thinking to myself, is like, wait a minute, this is the guy I got to go after every single day? Man, I don't know about this NFL thing, you know. It's like, but the thing is, it just, you know, I had to bring my A game against him, because people don't realize how hard it is to beat a guy in practice when he sees you in all of your moves, all of your tricks on a day-to-day basis, and you still got to find a way to win. Because if you don't, you're going to get yelled and screamed at, and then you're going to be like, well, he knows what I'm going to do.
Right, and
the coaches don't care. They don't care. So it's kind of like you're sharpening that sword, and Tariq was one of the best that out there, man. And I think Payton would say the same thing. He was so protected on his backside. He had nothing to worry about, because Tariq would always, you know, destroy anybody he goes against.
Absolutely. What a great credit to Tariq Glenn. We're talking to Dwight Freeney. We're winding this thing up. D, I appreciate you taking the time on it. We mentioned earlier in the show you're a father now. We didn't get into much golf now. I know that's part of your daily routine now. How is your golf game overall? I mean, I know you're breaking 100. I've heard some stories from Augusta, but are there any nickels that are being exchanged on the golf course these days?
Yeah. We're playing a penny per round. Yeah. But the thing is, golf, It has my full attention, you know, and it's just, for me, it's the perfect game at this stage of my life, because I'm so competitive, and it's nobody else's fault why that ball won't go where it wants to go, where it's supposed to go. It's all me. So I will spend hours upon hours just just confused, distraught. Why can't this ball
go where
I wanted to go? I turn the TV on, boom, I'm seeing guys hit all types of crazy shots. I go to the driving range. It was funny. The other day, not too long ago, maybe about a month ago, I go to the driving range. I'm struggling. I'm taking up all types of turf, and I'm freaking just like sculling across
the
entire driving range. I'm doing all types of stuff. I turn around. I see this young kid just striping the ball.
Good tempo, good takeaway.
Oh, my goodness. Tempo and weight on the right side. I'm like, man, this kid is, and I'm looking at myself just hacking away and swinging hard. I at some point, I just completely stop. I put my club down and I just stare at this kid. And now I'm watching the kid's technique. You know, the kid's like 10 years old. I'm like, man, I'm studying him. I'm like, man, so this is what you're supposed to do? Is he supposed to take it back? Like that, okay, so then I'll try it. And then I see a little twirl of the club after he hits a great shot. I'm like, man, this kid looks kind of familiar. I drive around, and I look at his bag, and he has a little tiger head on it. It's Tiger Woods' son sitting there on the driving range, like just doing everything like his father.
Oh, my.
And I'm thinking to myself, it's like, oh, well, maybe that's a good reason why he's doing what he's doing.
Wow.
And I've been looking so bad. But anyway, with that being said, it's one of the most frustrating games in the world, but I love it, and I'm going to try to figure this thing out eventually. I don't care if I'm 90 years old.
Keep following that kid at the range. Do what he does, all right?
Listen, man, I'm stalking him, okay? He's going to be my new swing coach.
Yeah, right.
Hey, Dwight, you are frustrated because you are an athlete, and you are still a competitor.
Yes.
Believe me, I am the same way. I love golf. I go practice golf at the driving range. I play, and there are days I don't even want to feel like playing because I'm hitting the ball all over the place. I don't feel like touching the clubs or anything. I just give it up for a day or two. But that's because we're competitors, and we want to do so well out there that it gets frustrating when we can't do something that we think we should be able to do. Hit a ball that's standing still. Now,
it doesn't move.
And you hit men that move and ran
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Track athlete.
You hitting the men. You could do that, but you can't hit a ball that's just sitting still. It is frustrating.
I want to quit every single time I play. Every single time during the round, there is a moment in time where I say, you know what? They can have this game. I can't do this.
No.
And then what happens is, then you hit one shot.
You won.
And I'm like, so that's what I got to do. Oh.
Freeney, I've seen you hit a 45-foot putt on 18 right down the street here at Brook, what's it called? Right down 56th Street right here. Brook, what's the heck's that country club called? I'm drawing a blank. I was with Clyde and you, and I think Stokely was with us, and you hit a 45-footer on 18 to push. So what I'm saying is, you talk about those great shots, and that was over a decade ago. Keep humming, because I hear about your great shots and I hear about your great rounds from the people that you play with, and you do have some game. So you're a little bit too hard on yourself, 9-3.
I can't help myself. Listen,
He's got game, Bill.
I'm sure he does.
He's got game, Bill.
I know Dwight. Dwight's very quiet and very low key.
He's gonna get in your wallet too.
Yes, he's gonna get in your wallet. Yes.
Oh, I'm not swinging good. I'm playing about a 16, maybe 14 right now. BS. Get out of here, Freeney. We're playing straight up. You're giving me strokes. Hey,
we negotiate the strokes after I hear what you're instructing.
I love it. I love catching up with you. And I told you this is a deep conversation we're having. I'm going to leave this last question to you. I've been in public with you in Indianapolis. I know what it's like to be Dwight. I don't know what it's like to be Dwight Freeney, but I know what it's like to be out with you. And everybody knows you, and everybody wants to say hi, and everybody wants to touch you and give you a hug and stuff like that. Do you have anything to say to these great fans here in Indianapolis? Still see 93 jerseys at the Colts home games, some even away games.
Yes, we do.
But if you have anything to say to these folks that are listening right now, you got fans all over the world, Dwight, but you got a heck of a lot of fans here in Indianapolis. What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, you know, I've always said this. I said, you know, you guys in Indianapolis made it a second home for me. You know, I wasn't a Midwest guy, you know, at all. But, you know, when I went to Indianapolis, I considered that home. And a lot of the reason why is because of the fans out there and how you treated us as players when we were there. You treated us like family. And I'm always going to be grateful for that. And you and I always said that, you know, through this journey that we've taken, you know, over the years and played and all those playoff wins and Super Bowl wins, that's not just for us players. It's for the fans as well. You know, you guys screaming as a 12th man, getting, especially for me, getting that defense going.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have won games for us. All right. So we're all in it together. And I will always be grateful for all those Colts fans out there who helped us along the way and cheered us on.
Defensive player of the year, Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion, all-decade team. The list goes on and on. Free, I love chatting with you. I love catching up. We'll see you on the golf course when you make your Midwest swing through Indianapolis again.
Absolutely. Without doubt.
The great
Thank
one.
Thank you, man.
It's great talking to you, Dwight.
Appreciate the time. That is number 93, Dwight Freeney, and this has been the Colts Official Podcast, the Alumni Edition. Dwight Freeney, the great one. I would say the Colt great, but we can go over Seattle. We can go over Arizona. I even got to throw Detroit in there. But, Dwight, you're the best. It was fun watching you work. And, you know, lucky Bill and I are to call you a friend as well as somebody we look forward to speaking to and look up to. So keep doing what you're doing. Best of luck with Miss Olivia and best of luck with that swing. Best of luck with that tempo, too.
Thank you, man. Pray for me.
I'm both things. You got it. Appreciate the time. That is Dwight Freeney. This is the Colts Official Podcast, the Alumni Edition. We'll talk to you soon.